and judges of the United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces is now open and in session. God save the United States of America and this honorable court.
Good morning. At this time, it's indeed a pleasure for us to transform the vast Eisenhower Auditorium here in the Lewis and Clark Center at the U.S. Army Command and General Staff College into a courtroom for the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. The court thanks everyone from the Commandant, the Provost, and the Staff Judge Advocate down to every member of the faculty and staff involved in making this hearing possible. The court bids a special welcome to Chief Judge Karen Arnold Berger and Judge Henry Green of the Kansas Court of Appeals, who are here with us today. With that, the court calls United States versus Harris. Counsel for the appellant prepared to argue? The government? Okay, appellant may argue.
Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Patrick Hoffman, and along with my co-counsel, Major Jack Einhorn, we represent the appellant, Staff Sergeant Michael Harris. Chief Judge Stuckey, permission to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes.
On November 6, 2014, after fleeing the state of Florida pending child pornography charges, Staff Sergeant Harris was then placed into pretrial confinement for the following 655 days. On August 22, 2016, the state of Florida dismissed the child pornography charges. Staff Sergeant Harris then pled no contest to his failure to appear, and the state of Florida sentenced him to 364 days. The Army would then go on to court-martial Staff Sergeant Harris for the very same child pornography charges and sentence him to over 5 years of confinement. The military judge erred in not crediting Staff Sergeant Harris with 291 days, the remaining of the 655 days of pretrial confinement. U.S. v. Allen dealt with this very same issue. And in U.S. v. Allen, there was a DOTI, much like now, that was a little vague and a little confusing. And in U.S. v. Allen, this court clarified that the DOTI was indeed confusing and granted, ultimately, Allen 81 days of pretrial
DOTI?
Confinement credit.
Are you talking about a Department of Defense instruction?
Yes, Your Honor, I apologize.
Okay, please make that clear.
Yes, sir. The Department of Defense instruction. So in U.S. v. Allen, there was an old Department of Defense instruction, and in this very case, there's a new Department of Defense instruction that now controls. The government relies on the exception to the general rule in that Department of Defense instruction, and it's the paragraph that is the exception to that rule, which is the notwithstanding any other provision, if a prisoner or accused is confined in a non-military facility for a charge or offense for which the prisoner had been arrested after the commission of the offense for which the military sentence was imposed, the prisoner shall receive no credit for such time.
Would you agree that the failure to appear was after the child pornography?
I would, Your Honor, yes.
And counsel, you refer to it as being an exception, but we're dealing with the plain language. What difference does it make that it's an exception to the general rule when it's explicitly stated?
Your Honor, the reason why I mention it's an exception is an unclear exception. The plain reading would indicate that any offense committed after the offense that the accused is ultimately court-martialed for would lead to no pretrial confinement credit whatsoever. So under that plain reading, and under the government's reasoning, under the Army Corps of Appeals reasoning, if he had showed up on that August 22nd day, pled no contest, was sentenced to 364 days, but then remained in confinement for 655, he would be entitled to those. He also would not be entitled to that 291 days. That's an absurd result.
Would you agree that the state of Florida had let him out? He'd been charged with the child pornography offenses, right? And he was free. And that's when he fled, correct?
Your Honor, I wouldn't agree that he was free. He had to post bail, which is a restriction on liberty in a sense.
Right. So, but what I'm saying is he was not in prison, right?
He was out
on bond.
Correct,
right?
Your Honor, yes.
And then he fled, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
And then he got him back, right?
Correct.
And then why did he forfeit the bonds?
He forfeited the bond for his failure to appear for his child pornography charges, Your
okay.
Honor.
Okay. And so then what? Then so the effect of that was what?
The effect of that would be that he was now going to be, his restriction on liberties were going to be elevated, and he was placed into pretrial confinement.
Thank you.
So, and along those lines, yes, Your Honor.
In terms of you saying that his restrictions on his liberty were elevated, if he had simply been on bond, he would not have received any credit in the military court, however.
Yes, Your Honor.
So we're talking really about apples and oranges. The key is the confinement.
I mentioned the elevation on liberty, Your Honor, just to show that the child pornography charges were still very related to the confinement time that he served. They were the basis for this entire process.
Well, no, counsel, because if he hadn't fled, then he wouldn't have been confined at all, unless and until he was convicted, right?
That may be, Your Honor. State of Florida could have deemed him a flight risk at some point for who knows what reason.
Well, woulda, coulda, moulda, right?
He ended up in Thailand. Come on.
Cambodia,
that,
Your Honor,
that
but
does kind of smell of flight risk.
Yes, Your Honor. And he absolutely flew. The appellant makes no bones about that. He fled. He missed his he did fail to appear for those charges.
Big time.
But the state of Florida really did the math here. And so he shows up, he's put back into pretrial confinement, serves those 655 days. State of Florida can't pursue the child pornography charges for what appears to be expert witness issues. They ultimately make the decision that they're going to hand him off to the military, and they parse out the days for what failure to appear was worth. Now, there's a cap on failure to appear. It was 5 years. They could have sentenced him to time served, and none of us are standing here today, or at least not me.
Counsel, can I ask about the language, the same crime? I imagine that for the Florida crime, that was a Florida statute that he was arrested for, and of course he's not convicted for violating a Florida statute. We're talking about two different sovereigns, so, I mean, are you taking the position that if it's the same underlying conduct, that is the same? Because he could have been convicted in Florida, spent time in prison subject for violating the Florida statute, and then be convicted in the court-martial and spend additional time for that.
So, are you suggesting, Your Honor, that the conviction of the court-martial would have been for the AWOL, I presume?
No. What I'm suggesting is that he was held in pretrial confinement for violating a Florida statute. Under your theory, he was held in pretrial confinement for both failure to appear and for violating a Florida statute prohibiting possession of child pornography. But he was not convicted of that same crime by court-martial. He was not convicted of violating a Florida statute prohibiting possession of child pornography. He was convicted of violating UCMJ. And so it's not the same crime.
It's the same underlying conduct, Your Honor.
Yes, but that's not the language of the regulation. The regulation says the same crime. Now, if the military had arrested him and asked that the state hold him in pretrial confinement, well, that would be different. But that didn't happen, did it?
Outside of the military putting a hold on him, a retainer, that was the extent of the military's participation in any kind of confinement process, Your Honor.
And do you have any authority for suggesting when the regulation says it's the same crime, it means the same underlying conduct as opposed to violation of the same statute?
No, nothing on point, Your Honor. I would just point to the fact that of the three jurisdictions that Staff Sergeant Harris was actually subject to, the state of Florida, the federal government, and the military is the only jurisdiction that he would not have received the pretrial confinement credit for. Under the new Department of Justice statute 18 USC 3865, it's a permissive allotment of pretrial confinement. So if the state of Florida would have tried him for the child pornography charges, he would have got credit for those 291 days. If the feds would have stepped in and decided, hey, we're going to prosecute him in federal court in Florida, he would have got credit for those 291 days. The military was the only outlet that could have potentially prosecuted him.
Well, is your argument simply that it's unfair?
It's absurd and unfair, Your Honor.
Let's leave absurd out of it.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's a DOD instruction promulgated in the normal fashion by persons having authority to promulgate it. The fact that it may result in a different outcome and that some may see that as unfair doesn't strike me as much of an argument.
Well, Your Honor, if you go back to the Department of Defense instruction and the plain reading seems to, at least as far as the Army Court went, the plain reading seems to stop at the point where it says that he is confined in a non-military facility for a charge or offense that the prisoner was arrested for after the commission of the other offense. They seem to stop there. But if you go on further down, it says that the prisoner shall receive no credit for such time. Now, that such time is allotted to, that 364 days is such time allotted to that failure to appear. So under we can do the plain reading, and the appellant still comes out with deserving credit for those 291 days that are left over. The state of Florida did the math. They parsed out what was and what wasn't. And under this Department of Defense instruction, that such time is clear. Are there situations where maybe we wouldn't be able to figure that time out? Absolutely. And we'd be in a much less...
Counsel, would you agree that it's not entirely uncommon for someone to go to a court-martial and having been in pretrial confinement and have a sentence adjudged that is less than the pretrial confinement that they've served?
Yes, Your Honor. I would say that happens.
And what's the effect of the extra time? It's nothing, right?
It's nothing. However, in those situations, if they're ultimately charged, or we're not in that situation. We have extra time for the underlying conduct that ultimately was court-martialed.
Counsel, you're talking about, in your mind, the absurd result. To what extent do we as a court, should we as a court, concern ourselves with what is an absurd result, in your view, as compared to simply focusing on the plain language?
Well, the absurdity doctrine stands for the fact that the court will read in and fill in gaps where the drafters of this provision may not have intended for this outcome to occur. And so
if we were to conclude, and I recognize that you would not concede this point, but if we were to conclude as a court that the language was plain, would you concede that the absurdity doctrine does not play into this?
With the language being plain, Your Honor, I think the outcome would still be absurd. We have a situation here where there are three jurisdictions that could have potentially imprisoned.
But that goes to the heart of my question initially.
Yes, sir.
To what extent you're now going from the absurdity doctrine to your concern that it's an absurd result, which is slightly different. To what extent should we be concerned as a court about what might be an absurd result as compared to us simply saying plain language, we're going to follow the plain language?
Well, I would hope the court would be very concerned. The whole reason why the Department of Defense instruction was drafted presumably was to avoid some sort of double credit for crimes served in outside unrelated jurisdictions.
But why isn't that a DOD general counsel type question rather than Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces question?
I'm sorry, I don't think I follow your
question. Well, again, you're talking about you feel that it's absurd, mm-hmm, and the way it's drafted and so forth, but why isn't that an issue for DOD to decide rather than this court as a matter of law?
Well, the DOD attempted to decide it and came to what is a confusing answer. And so the court now has to step in and figure out what is a just or unjust result or absurd or not absurd result. And under these facts, understanding there's other facts where this would not be an issue, but under these specific facts, it's clear why he was being held for those extra days. He was being held for two charges. He was being held for failure to appear and child pornography charges.
Counsel, let's assume for those 291 days that it's possible that they're all for the child pornography, or it's possible that some of them were for surplus holding for the failure to appear. In other words, maybe if he'd gone to trial and on both charges, he would have gotten a sentence that was 100 days longer, and then we'd have 191 days or whatever it would be. How do we know what those 291 days were for? How do we know that they're all for child pornography and that some of them might not be surplus days where he is held in pretrial confinement for failure to appear, where he just didn't get that much of a sentence for it? Remember, Judge Ryan said that it's often the case that somebody's held in pretrial confinement for a period that's longer than their ultimate sentence. Is that a question of fact Is it a question of law? I mean, how do we determine that?
You know, I would say that's it's a tough question. I would say it's probably a question of fact.
Would we defer to the trial judge then?
Well, Your Honor, he didn't find those facts. So we wouldn't be looking for any kind of abuse of discretion standard there because he never found those facts. The only facts
that
he found.
But he did find that he was confined because of the offense of failing to appear, right? I mean, he did find that.
Yes, Your Honor. He did.
And how is that clearly erroneous?
That part's not clear, Your Honor. I think Judge Maggs was getting at was how do we know what those 291 days were for and were not? And he doesn't find that those days were parsed out in any way.
But if he was confined for failure to appear, right, the 291 days, like if that's what he was confined for, the 291 days is just surplusage, which is he didn't get the sentence that met up with all the time that he had been in pretrial confinement.
Well, Your Honor, surplusage, I think, is a generous term for what happened. So the state of Florida, and it's clear on the record that the state of Florida was having a hard time with their expert witness. They couldn't get their case together. They were trying to. Ultimately, decided that they couldn't do it. And at JA-50, the military judge asked the trial counsel point blank, what was going on there? And the trial counsel says to the judge, state of Florida couldn't get their stuff together. They ultimately were going to have to dismiss the charges. So we ultimately stood in and decided to take Staff Sergeant Harris underneath our jurisdiction and prosecute him for the same conduct. And so to say that surplusage isn't meant for anything, it was the state of Florida trying to get their case together for those child pornography charges. And if they have all their apples in a row, again, we're probably not standing here today because I presume and would hope that it wouldn't take over nearly 2 years for the state of Florida to process what is a fairly simple case.
Counsel, you just ran out of time, but I want to ask you a question.
Yes, Your Honor.
In Allen, which is a kind of odd case, the federal statute governing this kind of thing contained an express exclusion for cases arising under the UCMJ. We decided that nonetheless a DOD instruction or regulation or whatever it was back then adopted that policy and that therefore we were going to adopt it. Okay, today you've got a federal statute 3568. Same thing. There's an express military exclusion. It's not applicable to trials in the armed forces. But we go to the reg. The reg says he doesn't get it. It worked in it. We did it in Allen. Why don't we do it here?
In terms of going to that 18 series statute, Your Honor?
Well, in terms of you got an inapplicable statute, but we applied it through the reg. Here you've got an inapplicable statute. We default to the reg. I know the reg doesn't say what you want it to say, but why not? I'm not saying we're pulling the statute through the reg in this case.
Yeah, in the new defense, the new instruction, Your Honor, doesn't mention the new statute at all. So
no, neither did the old one.
right, Your Honor. So the reason why I brought up the statute earlier was more of a juxtaposition of typically showing that he's getting different treatment than the other jurisdictions out there.
But that's not my question.
But under the plain reading of this instruction, Your Honor, I think the portion of the notwithstanding part that says no credit for such time, that such time, the plain reading of it would be for the failure to appear. That such time relates back to the charge or the arrest that happened after the offense he was ultimately court-martialed for. We know what that such time is meant to be.
So, counsel, on rebuttal, if you wouldn't mind, please address why any of this matters when the military did not try him for failure to appear.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for the government.
Good Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, may it please the court. I'm Captain Natanya Gans, and I, along with my co-counsel, Major Jeremy Watford, represent the United States. The Department of Defense instruction on which Allen Credit was based is no longer applicable. Under the current and controlling Department of Defense instruction and sentence computation manual, appellant is not entitled to the confinement credit he seeks because, as the military judge correctly found as fact, those 291 days were for the offense of failure to appear. And appellant just now has conceded that that was a finding of fact that the military judge made, and that finding of fact was not clearly erroneous. And it was not clearly erroneous as well because the record is replete with evidence that supports that finding of fact. I would like to go through some of that evidence now. When appellant was initially charged with 44 counts of possessing child pornography, the state of Florida did not put him into confinement. They released him on bail. He was then able to buy a passport, fly to Cambodia, and then in so doing, appellant committed a separate, independent, intervening, and serious offense under Florida state law of failure to appear at a court hearing. It was only after committing this offense that the state of Florida put him into confinement. And if that wasn't enough evidence to support the military judge's findings of fact, on Joint Appendix 129 and 127, appellant himself agrees that all the time he served was for the offense of failure to plea. In his plea agreement with the state of Florida and with appellant, he agreed to plead no contest to failure to appear, and in exchange for no prosecution of the child pornography and credit of 1 year and 294 days explicitly towards failure to appear. And the Florida trial judge confirmed this again in his judgment. Only count 45 was on the table at that point, and the trial judge, and this is found on Joint Appendix 127, the trial judge said, "You are hereby ordered to serve 364 days in the Orange County Jail with credit for 1 year's 294 days time served." To the extent that appellant is making a fairness argument, I would like to address several factors that undermine that fairness argument. First of all, if appellant had committed this crime in the military and went into pretrial confinement for child pornography, and the military judge then sentenced him, or there was a plea agreement, for less time than he spent in pretrial confinement, what would happen is appellant would walk. He would not be able to bank credit for some other type of benefit at a later date. And appellant seems to be making the argument that because this happened in a separate sovereign that dealt with it and resolved it in their own jurisdiction, that he should then be able to bank that time he served and then apply it in the military system, which the instructions do not provide for.
Counsel, what if instead of what actually happened, appellant had been tried and convicted in the military system, and I don't even know if we could have done this, but if he'd been tried and convicted and sentenced in the military system for violation of the Florida failure to appear statute because somehow he was on a federal base or something like that. Like this, let's assume that he could be tried for that, for a violation of that Florida statute. What would your position then be about giving credit for the sentence he served in the Florida system?
Your Honor, so assuming that he has already been convicted at the Florida state for failure to appear as well.
Yes.
So.
And I'm talking about under 1325.07.
Under that instruction, it would appear in that situation that he would receive credit for that. And that leaves aside the question of double jeopardy and whether or not this is the same offense for purposes of separate sovereigns. But, Your Honor, to answer your question, under that instruction, it would appear that that would be the same offense and he would be entitled to that credit.
So it matters then that he was tried in the military for desertion and child pornography?
Yes, Your Honor. 100%. He was tried in the military and convicted, and the sentence imposed in the military were for child pornography and desertion, not for the offense of which he was confined and convicted in Florida State Court. Another point on appellant's fairness argument that undermines it is the military did not request for the state of Florida to confine appellant. This was not at the behest of the military. The military had nothing to do with this. The state of Florida decided to confine appellant for failing to appear, and then they disposed of that time and that credit in their jurisdiction. The matter was done. And further, appellant actually bargained for this. Appellant put in writing and bargained for the exact deal that he got in Florida State Court. And now he was coming into the military courts and asking for credit that has already been disposed of in Florida State Court.
Counsel, on that point, do you agree that if he had been tried by federal civilian prosecutors that he would have gotten credit, as appellant's counsel said just a moment ago?
I don't agree with that, but I don't have any knowledge of what actually would have happened, but I don't think so, because the state of Florida and federal courts are separate sovereigns, and they're free to try him again for the same underlying conduct. So I don't think so, but I don't have any authority backing that up.
Counsel, a question about the DOD, the DOTI or whatever it is, the Department of Defense instruction.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's promulgated by the Secretary of Defense.
Yes, Your Honor.
Article 36A, in Article 36A, Congress delegates to the President the authority to prescribe post-trial procedures for courts-martial. They didn't delegate it to the Secretary of Defense. As far as I can tell, the President didn't redelegate it to the Secretary of Defense. Is this a legitimate instruction? And if so, why?
I think it is, Your Honor. And so the court in Allen wrestled with a similar question about
and
whether...
And came out with a dubious result, but beyond that, I'll keep my mouth shut. Go ahead.
Yes, Your Honor. And I mean, and to that specific point, you know, what the court noted was that the manual for courts martial and the post-trial procedures did not conflict with the result in Allen. In this case, in the absence of procedures directly on point in the manual for courts martial, and in the absence of any federal statute, this is the guidance that the court has. This is the guidance that the military judge had. This is the guidance that's before the court. There's nothing out there that conflicts with it. It's consistent with the manual for courts martial. And Congress in 18 U.S.C. 3551 has expressly exempted courts martials and service members from the sentencing computation procedures of the 18 U.S.C. series. So this court is left with this Department of Defense instruction and the accompanying sentencing computation manual, which by its plain language clearly states that appellant is not entitled to additional credit for this crime that he committed after the offense for which the military sentence was imposed.
Okay, so what you're saying is it's all we've got.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And so pending further questions from this court, appellant should not receive any additional confinement credit.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, to address the such time argument, one moment. My apologies. The such time argument here is we don't need to make an exception to the Department of Defense instruction in this case. It's pretty clear. If you're confined in a non-military facility for a new crime after which you're going to be general court-martialed for, then that such time should not count towards your any kind of pretrial confinement credit. And in this case, we know exactly what that time is. The state of Florida had a cap. They could have sentenced him to time served all 655 days. They made the decision that failure to appear was worth 364 days.
Can you address my separate question, which is even if everything you say is true, since he wasn't prosecuted in the military system for failure to appear, on what basis is he entitled to any credit anyway?
Well, Your Honor, if he would have been, let's say he was, for argument's sake, he was put into pretrial confinement immediately upon the child pornography charges. And then the state of Florida ran into the same issues with the expert witness and ultimately turned everything over to the military for them to deal with it. Under those facts, he would have received all 655 days.
But those aren't the facts, right? I mean, you're stuck with the facts that you have. And the facts that you have are he was prosecuted for failure to appear mm-hmm. in Florida. He was not prosecuted by the military for failure to appear. So even if you're right about the computation or the allocation of the time, I don't understand how you get credit for an offense that he wasn't charged with in the military system.
Your Honor, we're not asking for that credit. That's the 364 days. We're not asking for that. That was State of Florida's pound of flesh, and they took it, and Staff Sergeant Harris has no claim to those days. We're talking about the 291 days that the State of Florida says was not for failure to appear. That was for them to ultimately prosecute him.
Okay, so this depends on whether we agree with your interpretation of the sentencing document.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes. Your Honor, we're not asking for double credit here. We're not asking you to step outside of the bounds of the new Department of Defense instruction. The plain reading supports Staff Sergeant Harris being given credit for where credit is due. So pending any further questions from this court.
Thank you, counsel. The court thanks counsel for both sides. The matter is now submitted. The court will now recess in place for a question and answer session. We will take questions on anything except this case, other cases presently before the court, or cases which may in the future appear before the court. There being no other matter pending before the court is now in recess, pending further order of the court.